Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. We are finally back to the Ohio Over Here It's Original podcast. Today, we have a great friend of mine, man. We have a great musician on the channel, Nation of No One.
Hello, everybody.
So, this is my good friend, Ray Anderson. He's a one-man band called Nation of No One. He's also in another band, Whiskey, Stills, and Hash?
Yes, that is correct.
And who all does that consist of?
Whiskey, Stills, and Hash consists of Jordan Lucia on drums, John Kitko on bass guitar, Andrea on lead vocals and saxophone sometimes, and Alex Keefe on guitar, and me, I play guitar, keys, and sing sometimes.
So. Okay, sometimes?
Yeah.
Now,
everybody in the band sings sometimes, actually.
Okay, yeah. So there's no... Is there a lead singer, then?
Andrea is...
Like a main vocalist?
Yeah, Andrea is kind of like the main one, with Keefe being the second main guitarist. However, we got some new songs that we've been working on that I'm going to be taking lead for here, coming out in the near future.
And is that going to be EP, or are you guys working on a full-length project at the moment?
At this point, we just have a bunch of recordings and jam sessions we recorded during the whole COVID-19 crap. A lot of it started with me, Jordan, and Keefe, because Keefe was around the house at the time. We don't have full plans or anything conceptualized at this point. We just have a bunch of recordings.
Right on. So, on top of working in a group, though, me and you were also talking. You got a lot of solo stuff on the way. You've been giving a lot of thought into that.
Oh, yeah. I have tons of new projects coming out, especially here in the next few months.
What are you most excited about releasing to the people?
I got an album coming out here, hopefully by the end of July, called Self-Destruct Button. And it's going to be all of my original songs and plus some stuff I haven't released yet. That I had been working on as early as the start of the year. So, for any of my fans that like see this podcast or whatever, some of the songs that are going to be on there are "It Hurt Itself," "It's In Its Confusion," and "If I Can't Be Happy, Then I Want to Be High." So nice. That's going to be on there.
Nice, definitely some great song titles on there.
Oh yeah,
you know me and Cooch were talking. The other day, I told him I was going to have you on, and you know, we've all been friends for a while. Me and Cooch love your music. I remember getting the first Nation of No One album that you gave me, and
yeah.
You know, it's still in my collection. But me and Cooch were listening to It's Okay to Bully Pedophiles.
Oh yeah, right.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. There's a phenomena on Twitter and Tumblr. This is mostly a scourge of the internet, but there's a group of people that call themselves MAPs, which stands for Minor Attracted Persons.
Mm.
And these people, they're trying to like present themselves as if they're somehow part of the LGBTQ community. So I just wrote a song where I basically make fun of them for being pedophiles, because that's what they are, pedophiles.
Right.
And also, here's side note on that song, people actually took offense to that. Like, I had a bunch of people in
comments.
On my YouTube channel, in my comment section, I got a bunch of people like getting up my ass. One of them was actually a pedophile. He said he was a pedophile, so fuck them.
So hang that guy.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna double down and write another anti-pedo song that's even more violent now.
Right.
Honestly, when I get the chance.
Honestly, it's crazy how pedophiles are trying to become a part of that community and almost feel like it's okay in its own right, which obviously having any kind of sexual anything with somebody under the age of 18, you know, no matter the age, is very wrong. And you got people who do it to little kids, do it to minors, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like for people to try to be proud of that and come and join a really positive, growing community,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad that they think they would be accepted by society for that.
Yeah, there's a bit of a tragic history from which a lot of this sort of stuff stems on the internet. There was this like guy, his name was Amos Yee, and he was a refugee. I can't remember which country he came from, but like Z-list e-celebs on the internet that called themselves the quote-unquote skeptics brought this fucking guy to the U.S., to my country. Thanks a lot for that, by the way.
Yeah.
In his country, basically, he went on a bunch of anti-religious rants, and in that country, that's very much frowned on, so he got some jail time. And obviously, fuck their country, that country's government for doing that to him. Obviously,
do you know what country it was?
I can't remember off the top of my head. Like, I could Google it for real quick, yeah. But, yeah, nah, his name was Amos Yee. He made a bunch of anti-religion videos on his YouTube channel. Got put in jail for it for a while. And the skeptics bailed him out and brought him to the U.S. And shortly after that, he started going on rants about how, like, kids can consent at any age. So he outed him. Yeah, he was a pedophile. So thanks a lot, skeptics. Thanks for bringing a pedophile to my country.
Yeah, please take him out of here. Yeah. You know, but me and Coach were talking about that song, man, and we were both really amazed with it. I know that you're a huge Frank Zappa fan.
Yes.
And I know that that song just seemed down that kind of pathway. You know, very much I see the inspiration from Zappa on that one. And I feel like songs like that need to be made, and they almost mm-hmm. need to be heard. Now, do you think that's more, do you think people might take it as a parody song? Or do you think people are going to really acknowledge it that, like, yeah, it is okay to shame people for this because it is a crime, it is wrong?
It's okay to bully pedophiles being taken as a parody? No, I don't see that song being taken as a joke. I was pretty fucking straightforward and serious with it. And
right.
If I need to repeat myself, it is okay to bully pedophiles.
100%.
I mean, like, I also did a response video to the comment sections in that YouTube video, so, I mean, honestly, at this point, you can put it on my resume. I don't like pedophiles. I don't like child abusers.
And if you guys haven't heard this song, and if you haven't seen the review on the comment section, where can they go to check that out?
I have a YouTube channel called Nation of No One. It's on there, and it's currently my featured video, so you can just click that link.
Nice.
And it has, like, an artist rendition of a degenerate by the name of Nick Bates, who was a coprophiliac and also a pedophile, and he eventually, after admitting to molesting his half-sister several times on his Twitter and on various other places on the internet, he ended up in jail.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It has a funny picture of Nick Bates in prison with in like a cell and whatnot on that YouTube video, so that's
pretty
cool.
Oh wow, yeah, that's hilarious. But you know, I asked not to insult the song, but I asked if it was a parody because I knowing you, I understand your sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes you kind of do go to the parody lane for a minute, and you have a couple songs and a couple videos on the YouTube
mm-hmm.
that are definitely like that, you know. But I feel like you're a well-rounded musician in every area. And with that being said, I wanted to ask you, what's your take on the local scene? Because with me and you coming up in the same city, you know, I feel like you're in one lane, I'm in one lane, but everybody can come together at times, and then other times it seems like everyone's at each other.
Well, as far as the local scene goes at this particular present time, I haven't done too many shows, so I don't really know what the local scene has been looking like lately. Even before the COVID-19 crisis, my band was having a hard time getting shows together right now. As far as recordings go, I obviously, of course, like what you do.
Thank
you, sir. Chris Norris has been doing some pretty cool stuff. He has a band called Misery Melody, and I got to hear some of his band, full band recordings that he had been working on because I was auditioning for his band for a minute. And I really like what he's got
going
on. Yeah,
Chris is amazing.
Yeah, and he's... Actually, I was going to suggest that you guys should, like, collab on a song, because on the side, he does, like, this thing called, he has a different stage name called Danny Day, where he does almost, like, it's, some of it's, like, really young, lean-sounding type stuff,
okay.
like sad boy rap
yeah,
music,
right.
So, like, it's really cool.
You know, it's funny you say that, because, you know, everyone has some bad days, and I've been thinking about starting a segment when I'm having bad days called Sad Davey Hours.
Oh, okay.
And just kind of, I thought about using it as maybe like an interlude on an album or something, where I'm just kind of feeling down and kind of make it like a talk show.
Yeah.
Like, as I'm the host talking to myself, kind of like, oh, this is Sad Davey Hours. We're here with You know what I mean?
No, no, I like that. That sounds like a good idea for, like a recurring skit on an album. Yeah,
right, right. Because you see people almost trying to talk themselves up on a talk show. The host is trying to talk them up.
Yeah.
But you never see people on a talk show, like, my life is so bad. Or, you know, that's cliche, but I'm saying just, like, talking about their personal problems. Talking about their personal problems and things that's dealing with them that make them human.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that we don't see enough of in Hollywood and promoted is the human condition.
They give us almost like a superficial glimpse of glamour with how they present themselves instead of like a realistic interpretation of life, which has good moments and bad, you know.
Right, exactly, man. That's why I always try to keep it pure, you know, having conversations with people. I always try to keep it pure and try to not put that sense off.
Yeah.
You know, people talk to me, I might tell you what was going on in my day. And depending on my day, it might be good, it might be bad. But I'm there and I'm just glad to be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I feel like promoting more positive things in the world maybe would shift it. Everyone's thinking the world's going to end and all this is happening. But what if all this is going on? What if all this is breaking? So better things can happen. What's your take on that?
That leads me to a tangential thought of a Frank Zappa quote. He said something along the lines of, sometimes you need to get sick before you can get better. I think that applies to the individual as well as to possibly the rest of what we would describe as society. You know?
True. That is true. And, you know, I feel like there is going to be a lot of growth, but for the things that don't grow, that comes down to natural selection.
Yeah.
Exactly what's gonna happen with them. You know, so I feel like hopefully things don't go to shit and we don't go to hell. And you hear in the news and all these things about all the bad things happening. If only we seen more good. People want to talk about the protests, and I just wanted to shine a little bit of light on that. I know here in Lorain County, in the city of Lorain, the police walked with the people.
And it was peaceful.
There was no riots in Lorain. It was not crazy. The police recognized what was going on in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And the celebrities getting mad at celebrities because they feel like they ain't speaking up enough. But the celebrities who really care that are in the streets with the people.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle, have you seen his 846?
No, I can't say I have.
It was a video. It was a special that he put out on YouTube. And he was talking about everything happening, and I just really liked his take on it. He was talking about how celebrities, it shouldn't matter what a celebrity has to say. You shouldn't look up to a celebrity in these times.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's the on matters of public discourse, the last person you should be taking advice from are celebrities. In my ever so humble opinion.
But a lot of people look up to these people because a lot of people are inspired and influenced by these people.
Yeah.
You know? But you could be a celebrity for the craziest reason, and you may not have that leadership. You could be young with a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
and you're lost in it, you know? Just because you're a celebrity doesn't mean that you're equipped with the tools necessary to guide people through times like these.
Absolutely.
And that's what Dave Chappelle was getting at. And the streets are... The people in the streets are going to handle it. You know what I mean? And I don't mean by violence. Violence already happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people are just going to stand up until it's fully seen that something has to be done with this.
Yeah.
You know, and it when you look at society and see the take on it, I feel like people have been talking about this for years and years. People like Frank Zappa, his take on society is... a huge influence, so I know me, but also you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you've even showed me a lot from Zappa. And I feel like you just kind of understand, too, where this society is at the minute with it.
Yeah. I find it a little hard to articulate sometimes, but, yeah. As far as our modern society goes, it's hard to pick where to start, where all the ways I find particular discontent with it. It's a frustrating mechanism to operate one's life through, regretfully, you know.
Right. Yeah, I feel that though. But talking about Zappa, what do you think his greatest piece was?
Oh boy, that is a tough question.
In your opinion, that's most influenced you?
That's most influenced me? I wouldn't be able to pick one particular song. That's the problem, because like there are so many facets to the music of Zappa.
Very true.
That it's hard to that that you can't just pick just one, because they exhibit different features. Like for instance, Bobby Brown Goes Down is probably, as far as lyrical content goes, one of the most striking pieces of music that has influenced me to want to use and adapt humor in my music, because that song is drop-dead hilarious. You're right. Not going to hear lines like he was putting out on songs even today, because, like, you know, I'm not going to repeat the lines because for fear of copyright strike. Gail's kind of a... From what I hear, Gail is kind of a twat about that these days. But... yeah, I mean, he describes a character that goes through this journey where he's like a hip young guy going through school. He's a rich guy, upper class guy. He meets a cheerleader, gets her to do all his homework for him, and then rapes her.
Oh.
And then he has a negative sexual experience with, quote, a dyke named Freddy, and then, like, becomes a homosexual man after that, and like gets golden showers and stuff like that, and it's just the absurdity is hilarious.
Yeah,
and yeah, but as far as like actual like construction of the composition goes, it's I like it. It's very doo-wop inspired. You
right.
Especially during the second chorus, you'll get a lot of the background vocals. Zappa, for as much of a fan of 20th century classical music he was also very big into early Motown and doo-wop and stuff like that.
Right.
And so it would make sense that he would incorporate that into a piece of music. Now, as far as the 20th century side of music goes, like, I really like pieces like that he's did, like, The Black Page, huge amounts of polyrhythms and percussion, which I like.
Okay.
There are several versions and recordings of a piece of music called Moe and Herb's Vacation that had, like, several flutes and contrabass flute, I think the other one was.
Okay.
There was a full orchestra recording done by the London Symphony Orchestra, but my favorite one is the one where he had a bass player in the studio and a drummer. That was really ridiculous to hear the drum lines on that.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. You know, I think recording drums, you got to be almost picky about where you do it.
Yeah.
You know, because drums, I don't know if a lot of folks know, but recording drums, would you not say the hardest part about recording an instrument?
Oh, it... In a lot of ways, yeah. It's definitely the most tedious thing to record.
Everything,
yeah,
set up mics and, you know.
That's one of the reasons right now we've actually been using my virtual drum kit, the one I've been using to do all of my recordings for the Whiskey, Stills, and Hash recordings. We've just been going digital everything.
Okay.
And it's really, really helped.
Yeah.
The last album we recorded, we used live drums, and yeah, it really is a pain to mic those and do all that.
Right. I believe it, man, because you gotta get all the hi-hats right, you know, you gotta make sure the tracks are all heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it done myself. I've seen it on, like, movies and TV and stuff, but Cooch, you know, Cooch being an engineer going through the whole process as well,
yeah,
he's told me plenty of times, like, that's just, you know, could be hell sometimes trying to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's why being a hip-hop artist, I sometimes kind of, you know, it's a little easier for me to make music sometimes because you just give me a beat.
Yeah.
But I've also kind of hit that point to where I like it when you'll send me some stuff, or Cooch might send me something, and I hear real drums in it, and I can tell that it's a real piece. Like, when we made Chasing the Sun.
Yeah.
You know, for you guys who don't know, Ray played the keys in Chasing the Sun.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about doing a part two. We gotta look out for that. Yeah, we definitely gotta do that still, though.
Yeah. I also have a couple other beats I wanted to send you here in a bit. Some of the old stuff that I... made like 2 years ago when I was when I was trying to be a beat producer, which didn't go well. Some of the instrumentals I made were okay though. Like, I have one that I need to salvage. It was called Smooth Moves. I just need to before I send it to you, I need to bring down the frequencies on the 808 drums, because I feel like they're a little too sharp and ringy. It doesn't sound good in the ears. It just sounds too much like a hiss, not much like an 808 should sound. And I also need to bring the melodies up a little bit.
Okay.
But after that, I'm going to send it to you.
Oh, please do, man. Ray produced Eerie as well.
Oh, yeah. That was before I knew how to produce at all. I'm not going to lie.
That was in my early days of recording. We did that, I think, like 7 years ago now.
Yeah, that was... Dude, like, you put some mad bars to that, though. Dude, you were doing some, like, all... Like, I loved the build-up you did at the end. It just worked so well. It was so cool.
Thank you, man.
That was a great one.
That was something, Ray hands me something with different things going on here and there, man, and you gotta really step it up, you know? I knew if Ray was gonna send it, it was gonna be the one, so I had to go hard. And I was working at Domino's Pizza at the time, and I remember not doing the dishes in the back when we were closing, because I was writing to that beat.
Hell yeah.
And I was trying to go as hard as I could, but that's when I was still trying to rap as technical as possible,
yeah.
Which came off good, but... You know, I want to show you some stuff after the podcast where I can still be kind of more technical, but it's kind of, it's different. It's different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like when this rapper is trying to do, like, lyrical, miracle, spiritual, like, there's only so much you could do with that.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
So,
looks like we have some guests.
Yeah. Shout out to James. James is my neighbor. He's been my neighbor here for 2 years. James is the man. Shout out to him, man.
Right. Just...
But yeah, man, you're definitely gonna send me the beats, and I do have a few things to show you that I've been working on. I got a song coming out with my dude Ben West,
mm-hmm.
from Cleveland, so I'm excited to show you that. Do you want to talk about heartbreak?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I could talk about that a million ways to one.
Well, you know, I always try to bring up something for the folks, you know. I always try to bring up something, maybe just a little heavy.
And I can relate it back to like the impetus for the album that is Self-Destruct Button that I'm gonna be releasing here soon. Oh, and the follow-up album I got coming out after that called Don't Lose Your Mind. I actually recorded the entire album for that one like last year. Like, that album's done, and I've been keeping it in stock for. Roughly around now, and I recorded a lot of music on a chord organ, and like basically did a Daniel Johnston type sounding set of songs, and I also brought out my Casio keyboard too to do some stuff. But yeah, I got an album called Don't Lose Your Mind coming out. But
you know, I was gonna ask you about the heartbreak because of the Self-Destruct album.
Yeah,
because you've been telling me about that one, and I was like, wow. And I was just thinking, you know, I was like, I wonder if this is going to be a piece about that. And the only reason I ask about it is because I always like to ask on something with some substance.
Yeah.
Only when it's something I can relate to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And obviously, I mean, it seems cliche. Everybody can relate to heartbreak. But, you know, like when you feel something, I just feel like it's good to, like, speak on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Shouts out to my ex. Fell in love with a girl in Philadelphia. Who lived in Philadelphia. I went out to see her, and I'm not going to share all the details about what happened between me and her, but she split and left me with a lot of darkness to deal with, and I didn't deal with it very well. Not at all. But either way, I ended up with a bunch of really, really depressing songs. I did a bunch of covers of depressing songs, too. But... I made a couple mixtapes too here and there, but I had a couple of originals come out through the period about confusion at the start of the year when I suspected like things were going sour between me and her, And then the song I wrote like 3 days after she split, If I Can't Be Happy, Then I Want to Be High. I mean, right. Like, well, that says it all right yeah. there. Like, I was just off the fucking wall, gone in the darkness. And song after song I pumped out with this in mind. And next thing you know, I have an album's worth of material. So there it is.
Do you sit back, though, and look at it like it's kind of like a dark, twisted fantasy to a point? Because it's like, yeah, you went through this hell and this thing that was very real and very traumatic. But being an artist, you have a very expressive way of getting it out through the music.
Yeah.
And almost dealing with it. And it almost creates the best music you can make. You know what I mean? In a weird, crazy, kind of fucked up way.
I honestly don't 100% know about that. Like, I don't know where my art and my music would be if this didn't happen. I was already starting to really kind of like gear up and make shift gears in a sense to where I was putting out more recordings than normal. I was putting out like mixtape after mixtape of mostly cover songs
okay.
and an occasional originals and whatnot. And like I was through the cover songs, surprisingly, I was actually like starting to build up a very small little audience going on. So who knows where I would have been or where any artist would be. If they didn't have their traumas. I, for one thing, for instance, love the music of Daniel Johnston, the music and art of Daniel Johnston.
Right.
And unfortunately, he suffered from very, very serious mental illness, bipolar, and later in his life with psychotic symptoms. Wow. So, honestly, I kind of feel like his life absolutely would have been better if he wasn't going through that while he was trying to record his music and get famous. Like, he had several chances to like really cement himself in the music industry, sadly subverted by not being able to deal with his reality, you know.
Yeah,
and it sucks,
right?
But yeah, I mean, different perspectives, you know.
Well, the reason that I bring it up is because there's been a rapper by the name of Freddie Gibbs, who I've been listening to. He just dropped a new album with The Alchemist. You guys should go check out that new project. But he has a song called Something to Rap About. And in that song, he talks about God or the universe made me do this. Life made me do A, B, and C.
Yeah.
So I have something to rap about. So it's like, which I mean, it meaning like he had more to give. You know what I mean? He's rapping, he's venting and expressing that, and he's getting it out. So he went through that trauma, so he had that trauma to fuel the raps and to make him that money and get the success and be recognized. And it's almost like fuel to the fire, you know what
right.
I mean?
Right, yeah.
So that's why I say sometimes it could be great. You know, I'm a big Kanye fan, and he put out 808s and Heartbreak mm-hmm. right after his fiance left him and his mother died. And that was at the height of his fame, you know. And yeah. I can relate to that, to your mom having cancer and you doing the music grind. I'm not comparing myself to Kanye by yeah. any yeah. means, but I'm just saying, you know. And I know that feeling of going crazy in them times and having to be on stage and you want to fucking shoot your head off, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when I was listening to that Freddie Gibbs song on my way to pick you up for the podcast today, it made me really think about that, you know, because obviously being friends, I heard about the heartbreak and stuff. And then I was wondering with him going through this and battling through this, if he's going to make phenomenal music, because you see it happen. It just gives you that realness, and you almost just, it's like translucent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, with me, it's kind of always how I've processed my reality. I've only ever been brought down by the world enough to where I thought I was going to give up music once. No, twice, my bad. I take that back, twice. But, you know, it's like I'm an addict or something. I keep coming back. I guess it is what it is, man. You know?
Yeah. You know, I've also had them thoughts. I made a to Cleveland and Beyond halfway through. I was thinking, like, man, you know what? Nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear this. Like, I've already gone through enough BS, man. Like, let me just hang it up now. Let me go to school. Let me do something typical, you know? And I would just, I don't know, man. I would just get this urge, and just no matter what, I had to write. Even if I wasn't gonna show it to the world. I don't make something to impress the world. I just make something because that's what I'm feeling at that time.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I feel like me and you both make a lot of music out of feeling. And I can honestly say, making To Cleveland and Beyond, a concept album about getting lost in space and getting lost in my own head, I knew that if I didn't make that, I probably would have came to the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm happy to have music, but it still sucks that we got to go through these trials and tribulations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I will say this. In some ways, the last 6 months or so definitely lit a fire under my ass to start putting out putting out more music. Like, really just, like, trying to get as much consistent content out to my various platforms as possible, you know?
Yeah.
I've also found, like, a lot of very distinct and interesting music communities online. Through Negative XP and MSG's Collective, you know, it's been a really interesting time.
Right.
For me. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that you're making some of the best music because of this, or how do you feel like all this is impacting the music?
For one thing, and some of the songs have been okay, some of them were eh, but there's like a couple of songs that just really, really stood out few months. One of them being my cover of Negative XP's song Goodbye. I think those are hands down some of the best vocals I've ever recorded. It just really, at the time, it really just spoke to my feelings on what and whatnot. And I actually changed the line in the chorus in the original version. He says, "Wouldn't you know?" No, my bad. "Don't you know it would hurt me so to say it?" No. What was it? Yeah, I remember now. "Don't you know it would hurt me so to say goodbye to you?" I changed it to, "Don't you know that every song I'm saying goodbye to you, with every song I'm saying goodbye to you."
Oh, wow.
Because I felt like at the time, every recording and everything I was doing, I was writing to say goodbye to my ex. So I was in a really, really messed up state of mind at the time. But it definitely brought out the real genuine feelings for that recording that I made of that song. In my opinion, but right. Yeah.
I'm really excited to hear it. I really can't wait for all this music to be coming out. I did hear the cover that you were talking about, but all the new stuff you got,
yeah,
like we were talking, I'm excited to hear the Self-Destruct Button.
Yeah,
I feel like that's really going to be a nice one.
The song Self-Destruct Button is already out.
Right, I did hear the song.
Yeah, that was a fun song, even though the lyrics on that one were really fucked up too. I wanted to just make like a really, really short, heavy song,
right?
And that's what I mean. I should tell you the reference of what the album title comes from. It's the name of a ridiculous Yu-Gi-Oh card. It's a trap card to where, like, if you have a certain number of life points, and your opponent like does some BS, it'll set both your life point counts to zero, which means you both lose, basically. That's what it means, and you have to redo a duel after that. So. People would make, like, these really trollsy decks where they would fucking, like waste all their deck till they pulled Self-Destruct Button, and then just constantly replay Self-Destruct Button at tournaments, so eventually it got banned. It was just a ridiculous and stupid card, but I thought it was funny to name an album after that, so I did.
That is pretty great.
Yeah.
I would get that card. For those of you who don't know, I was a huge Yu-Gi-Oh fan as a kid. Do you still play Yu-Gi-Oh, Ray?
For a minute I had one of the video games, one of the simulators, but I don't actually, like, play with the cards or anything like that anymore. Occasionally, if I find a decent sim, I'll mess around on the sim, though.
Me and my younger brother, who's 4 years younger than me and him obviously grew up on it, So, last year for my birthday, he bought me an original Yugi deck with the original Dark Magician and everything. Oh,
that's cool.
It's pretty sweet, man. So, I duel sometimes, you know, but you'll probably kick my ass. I don't know. I might have a shot.
No, you'd probably kick my ass. Like, I haven't, like, played legit in years, especially, like, with all these new cards they have for the game, like Link Monsters and Pendulum. Dude, like, I freaked when I saw Pendulums, because I saw people were, like, playing cards with 8 stars or whatever and whatnot, like, where that didn't used to be a thing.
Right.
But I also didn't understand what Pendulums were at the time. Mm. It's basically a card that can function either as a monster or as a magic card.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
That's insane.
But at the time when I saw it, I was like, oh, fuck this.
Right.
And they had a lot of chain effects to where, like you can stack them up and, like, just fill your fucking field with, like tanks. And it's just like, what is this? New Yu-Gi-Oh! Is, like really quick pace.
Yeah.
Compared to what it used to be.
Right, because it would take you 3-4 turns to get a 4 or 5-star monster up.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're just whipping them out, man.
Yeah, whipping them out like it's nothing.
Right. Oh, man. You just might have to get a Yu-Gi-Oh! Deck soon, man. We just might have to throw it down.
Oh, man. Like, when I was messing around, like, the deck I had the most success with, and I'm sure a bunch of the people that are in my small little internet circle that do follow Yu-Gi-Oh! Are going to cringe when I say this, but I had, like, this really, really cool and fun Chaos Max Dragon deck. Blue Eyes Chaos Max Dragon deck. It's a ritual oriented theme, and that's what I really liked about it, because that's, like, something that's been around since original Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah.
And I had, like, a bunch of, like, support cards to where I could quickly summon up Ritual Fodder and also dig out either Blue Eyes Chaos Dragon or Blue Eyes Chaos Max Dragon, which had these ridiculous effects. The Chaos Max Dragon, I think it couldn't be destroyed in battle, and it's unaffected by magic and trap cards, so I think it could really only be destroyed through Kaiju summoning, but, and I could be wrong on that, but yeah, and its secondary effect is it does piercing damage, but double. So if you attack a defense position monster, you can, like, get piercing damage plus double. But here's how I would work around it. I had, like, a bunch of creature swaps and monsters with 0 defense points.
Right.
So I would just, like, and because Chaos Max Dragon has 4,000 attack points, I would literally just waste a guy in, like, 3 turns like that.
Oh, wow.
It's hilarious. I just love that about that deck.
I had Exodia.
Yeah.
And I had Exodia in my pocket when I was a kid. And I changed, because I was getting ready to go to bed, and my mom washed my jeans. I lost Exodia that day.
Oof.
And
oof,
I won him in a duel. I dueled one of my friends for the last 2 pieces. I had everything but the legs, so I was trying to get those. And I, sure enough, man, I beat him, and that same night, I lost him.
Damn.
I was so disappointed.
Damn.
I remember when the God cards came out.
Yeah. I remember when I learned that the God cards weren't tournament legal and that their effects weren't even remotely close to the effects that they were in the anime.
Right.
I remember buying, like, the for $100 for stupid sums of money, the original,
yep,
when they first brought them out. They were just for show. Yeah. They were just for show. The real official God cards with their actual effects printed on the cards didn't come out till years later.
I remember I had the Japanese ones. They were all in Japanese.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Right.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Japanese flea market. So they might have been knockoffs, but I don't know.
That's possible, but no, yeah, that's pretty cool nonetheless.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have, I think I still have, like, a bunch of knockoff cards with, and they have, like, really ridiculous attack points and whatnot, too. Like, there would be monsters with, like, their original attack points, but plus, like, 10,000 next to it. And I think it was, like, misprints or something. So, like, say a monster had, like, 1,400 attack points, it would be printed with, like, 1,400 attack points.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of bad.
Yeah. It was funny, though. That was really cool. I didn't... obviously, I didn't play with those cards because that would be dickish, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was cool to have.
Shit. Well, man, is there anything else that you have to say to the people?
Yeah. As far as new material goes, the first album... My bad. The first release of the year I did was Dark Matter. That is out as of this time. You can find it on every major streaming platform, so go check that out. I have, at this point, planned out in August, I'm going to be playing at Noise Fest, the second annual Noise Fest. I'm going to be playing with Whiskey Stills and Hash, my band,
nice.
As well as myself. Work and everything else permitting, of course. But yeah, so I got that going on. I want to shout out the crew in Spurgbin. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope you found this podcast to be informative of what I do. And shout out to my YouTube, SoundCloud, and Twitter followers and all that.
Where can they find you on all them?
My Twitter, I'm just Nation of Known still, I think it was, as far as my at goes, it was like Ray NONOWSHUVT, something like that. I basically just named off all my associated acts on that one. And you can find me as Nation of Known on YouTube. And I do have a Facebook. Don't go there. I barely ever use my normie book for music and promotion and stuff. No one I know IRL really follows what I do besides Slagle and like people I actually like work with, you know. But yeah.
And Ray's great, man. You guys need to go check out Nation and No One. He has some great music coming out. He had to go through some heartbreak to make some good music.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's going to come out pretty amazing, man.
I would like to speak real quick on like one other project that I have in the works.
Sure.
That's going to be out shortly after Don't Lose Your Mind comes out. It's going to be like an anime-inspired project. I'm doing a bunch of songs for a bunch of various female anime characters, sort of like little tributes to them. And the project is going to be called Alice.
Oh, nice.
So a lot of people know me on Discord by my username Hardcore Alice, so that's where that reference comes from.
Nice.
Yes.
All right, man. That's it?
Yeah.
Ray, thank you,
Ray.
Man. My brother.
My pleasure. It's
you
got
to show me the beats now.
Yeah.
Over here, it's original. Thanks for tuning in.
Righteous. Just-